I told Eric we were just going to sing Love, Love, Love by the Beatles, you know, and get this whole sermon over with. So he said, sure, Kate. So anyway, what I'd like you to do is look at the picture, the photograph on the front. I love New York City. I lived there for 20 years, and I try to go back as often as I can, and I went back last summer. Went, you know, you go to the old haunts. So I went into Columbia University. I don't know if you know the campus, but it has a beautiful open space, and there's kind of a labyrinth circle in the middle. And I just walked past, and lo and behold, I thought, oh my God, this is so beautiful. Didn't realize it was graduation day. And here's, I'm assuming they are family. Here's this man kneeling, the woman holding her hands, you know, almost like a blessing on this new role, the graduation on the cap. He's kneeling down, kind of blessing the baby that's in the womb, and their child, I'm sure, is leaping for joy, right? This is a Trinity picture if I ever saw one. And I thought, oh, how lucky I am to have been here at this moment. There is such love and hope in that photo. Love one another is one of Jesus' simplest messages, well, isn't it? Yet the words of this morning's gospel can be very abstract unless they are put into context. The scene is the Last Supper, and Jesus just finished washing his disciples' feet. Then he tells them, I give you a new commandment that you love one another. So this is the action that Jesus does. He's washing the feet. John's gospel is the one gospel where more importance is put on the foot washing than on the breaking of the bread. They are equal as Eucharist. And washing the feet is the act of a servant. And so Jesus gives us this model that foot washing is really the most important thing that a disciple can do. This is how we love one another. Foot washing is the illustration in action of the breaking of the bread. So what would it feel like if here at Grace we alternated Sundays? One Sunday we would come and we would break bread together, and the next Sunday we would come and we would wash each other's feet. Which Sunday would have the most attendance? Yet John is saying we cannot break bread unless we wash feet. So, a question for us. We look around the community and we gave, every year we gave a pitcher and a towel service award. Who would we give it to? How about the parents who attend with their children and put them first Sunday after Sunday, putting away their own private time so that they can watch out and care for the children in this community? How about those who set up, bring our food, wash our dishes, attend to our gardens, practice our songs, lend an ear when needed, welcome us, hang up our art, arrange our flowers, work on our vestries and committees, visit our sick? You could add many more. These folks are our foot washers. Literally, our foot washers. Little children love one another. Jesus calls his disciples little children. Last week, I was with a group of women in Port Townsend, and we were talking about how we absolutely hated it when someone talks down to us. For example, last week, I ordered a latte, and there was a high school girl who was serving me, and she kept calling me sweetie. Yeah. So I said, my name is Kate. And she said, okay, honey. I thought, I'm in a no-win situation here. But this is not what Jesus is doing in this reading. Technia is a Greek term that was used as an affectionate word in popular Greek. It's the only time that it's used in John's gospel. Jesus is at home. He's speaking lovingly to his friends. And he knows he's about to leave him. So he wants this intimate moment. And so he tells them, only one thing. If I leave you with only one thing, it is the word love. That's it. Don't need to know anything else. Then he says, you will be known as Christians, not by your fundraisers, not by your cathedrals, but by love. That means that we can throw out all the things that are put up as litmus tests for being Christians. I don't know, some of you grew up in different traditions, and I hear sometimes, well, we had to do this or that. Do you have to go to church on Sunday? Do you have to serve on a vestry or a committee at least once in your lifetime? Do you have to carry a Bible or ring doorbells for Jesus or hold a certain view on a multitude of social issues? No. Jesus says no. My dearest friends, love one another. And surely there was love before Jesus gives us this commandment. But what I think is different is that Jesus, and Kim was saying it this morning, we have to love our enemies. And the truth of discipleship is to learn to love even the enemy within ourselves. We probably all have one, folks. For me right now, it's really hard to embrace the Christian nationalism that's going on in our country. It's very difficult. But the bottom line is that Jesus says there's no other commandment. And how do we know how to love well? Jesus says we must love without distinction. Love is not built on what we feel, but on what we do. This passage, if you noticed, Judas leaves the room. And then Jesus becomes very intimate with those that are left. He doesn't reject Judas, but Jesus waits to talk of his love and his truth where he knows he will be accepted. He has his friends around him. This is his last hours. Who will honor him? Sitting over the remains of a meal with his closest friends, Jesus' words are so tender. I had some friends over last night, actually, for dinner, and we spent more time talking after feeding ourselves. That's where the depth comes. So Jesus is leaving, and where he's going, he says we can't follow. But we know that we can meet in a relationship, even that ends with death. We still have love. Yes, we still have love. We are in a hard time in our country. Loving relationships are divided into sides, and we don't have to share, trust, or follow every person. Because Jesus did not do that with Judas. Yet he loved Judas. There's a distinction, and there's a line here, and that is so hard to find, isn't it? I read in the paper, I actually think this is pretty funny, that the new Pope has several brothers. One lives in Illinois, and he talks with him every day, and they share the same worldview, and they are very close. He has another brother in Florida who believes in conspiracy theories and is a MAGA supporter. And this man says he's not going to change his ideas just because his brother is Pope. He might calm down a little bit on Facebook. Folks, I love this, that the Pope has a family just like many of us have. You know, and I want to see how he acts this out on such a public stage. You know, We are all on stage really with this question, aren't we, as how we work with this brokenness that has come upon us. So what would Jesus ask of us? He sets an example. And as I said, we don't have to share our most intimate thoughts, and perhaps we may never totally trust a specific person, yet we love. So how do we recognize that love-giving relationship? I think it has characteristics. Service, inclusivity, patience, reaching out, letting go. We already talked about service, so what about inclusivity? I read this story about Mother Teresa when she first went to Calcutta. It was like very early in her service there, someone came to the door and said, there's a Hindu woman and her family and they're starving. And she said, okay. She brought rice down very quickly to her neighbor, and the neighbor took the rice and left and went out the door and then came back. Mother Teresa says, what's up? She said, well, there's a Muslim family that needed food too. Their children are starving. So from Christian to Hindu to Muslim, there's no difference, folks. Love encompasses. Feed one another. That is the love. Patience. That's a hard one sometimes, isn't it? Patience with what we have, what someone else has, what we think they have, what I know I don't have. I once sat in a restaurant, this was in New York City, and I remember every detail. I don't know if you know the diners where you have tables that are really close and they're connected. And I went in and there was an older couple. I could hear every word they were saying. They were right next to me, a man and a woman. I assume they were married, I don't know. But the woman was obviously having some cognitive issues. And the man was ordering for her and for himself, and he ordered the dinner, and he said, one glass of wine. And this must be a ritual, because the server came in and put the glass of wine right in the middle. And the meal went on, and they were kind of quiet, but they were watching the glass of wine. And finally, the man touched the hand of the woman and said, my love, it's your turn tonight for the glass of wine. Whoa. You know, they obviously didn't have enough for two glasses. And I thought, the loving patience, and it was so profound in this meal and the beauty of it. A true Eucharist. Reaching out. I've told you stories about my neighbor, how we are so different politically and religiously, and we are on Facebook. And the last couple of weeks, I've just been getting so agitated. So it started with the death of Pope Francis, and the comments on his site were, thank God the Antichrist is dead. You know, this kind of, and that went on for a few days, and then it was, women who dare to preach in church are killing Christianity. And I'm like, you know, he's my neighbor. We see each other every day. So I thought, we've lived in community for, I think, 8 years he moved in. So I said, don't get agitated. Tell your truth. So, you know, back on Facebook, and I put a few things. I said, I think I can preach. I feel good. Jesus hasn't said anything yet. And I haven't heard anything from him, but we still say, hello. Do you need the garbage taken out? Do you need this? And I feel that somehow this is where, as a country, if we cannot speak in unison, we still need to speak in love. We have neighbors. And the last one is letting go. Letting go. In the gospel, the disciples are about to lose the physical presence of Jesus. Yet, Jesus implies that love does not lessen with separation or change in circumstances. And also the reading from Revelations, I love that reading. We heard the home of God is among mortals. Right here, folks. This is the key to love. Right here, right now, in this place. Being human, we all know that we have to let go of everything. And as our life, you could make some sort of linear letting go path, couldn't you? It's an exercise to do that. What is you let go of? Sometimes we let go of who we think we are, our importance, our jobs, our loved ones, our health. And even Jesus had to do this. So at this Last Supper, what's he doing? He's begging his community to love. That's where his presence will be. Anthropologist Margaret Mead wrote this poem for her only child, Catherine, when she left home. It was a grand goodbye. You know, children very seldom will come back to live with us forever. That I not be a restless ghost who haunts your footsteps as they pass beyond the point where you have left me. You have left me standing in the new sprung grass. You must be free to take a path whose end I feel no need to know. No irking fever to be sure you went where I would have you go. Those who had fenced the future in between two walls of well-laid stones, but lay a ghost walk for themselves, a weary walk for dusty bones. So you can go without regret, away from this familiar land, leaving your kiss upon my hair, and all the future in your hands. Love, easy to define, no. But each of us knows when we are held and embraced, the place of emptiness where God's love can flow and where God can be created among us. Jesus' parting words, he's letting us go, folks. Jesus' parting words are his own kiss on the disciples' hair, on us. He trusts us with the future. Little children love one another. And I have a final question for you to think about in your own meditation when you're out walking or sometime during this week. If love could speak, what do you think it would want to say to you right now? To you, if love could speak. Amen.